Yeah, a number of people have asked me to comment on the situation of Muslims in India, particularly following a few recent viral videos that have gone around and circulated on social media that highlight the persecution that Muslims in India are suffering under the BJP government and under the pervasive Hindutva ideology, which has as a central component anti-Muslim genocidal hatred. So first of all, let me say why I haven't said anything about this until now, because I usually hesitate to say anything about issues that are characterized by histrionics and propaganda, because I find it very difficult to extract the factual reality from the really the flood of emotional and often hysterical exaggerations, denials, and competing agendas that always surround these types of issues and incidents. I mean, though you'll see an excerpt of a video, and it always comes with a prepackaged narrative to ensure that you will interpret the video in a particular way. But of course, you never actually know the context of the video. You never actually know what happened before it, what happened after it, or even if the video is showing you what it says that it's showing you. So it becomes very hard for me to say anything intelligently about a situation that is almost only ever represented by people who have vested interests and are trying to implant an opinion in your mind. And it's very important to me to try to be objective. Muslims are not always in the right, and non-Muslims are not always in the wrong. So if you're not in a position to independently investigate an incident or independently investigate an event or an issue, when there are conflicting versions of that incident or event or that issue, then it becomes almost impossible to take a position on it with any sort of confidence, at least for me. So, for example, there's this video going around of a Muslim boy being slapped by his reportedly Hindu classmates upon the orders of his Hindu teacher. So, of course, everyone is running with the anti-Muslim hatred narrative. But there are conflicting stories around that incident. And I don't think any of us who weren't there can really say with any confidence, conclusively, why that happened. Though we can all agree, of course, that it is atrocious and unacceptable. But corporal punishment is not unusual in India. And that's an issue in and of itself that should be addressed. But one thing is clear, and that is that whether or not this incident was motivated by anti-Muslim hatred, whether or not that boy's family is being honest in claiming that it is or that it was motivated by religious hatred. The point is that the climate in India is such that no one would have the slightest hesitation to believe that it was motivated by anti-Muslim bigotry. And the permissive cultural approval in India of violent persecution of Muslims, that's not open to question or debate. That's just a fact. The Hindutva ideology is a demented, delusional, psychotic manifesto for ethnic cleansing. Prime Minister Modi has been a hate-mongering demagogue his entire career, and he has at least 20 years of Muslim blood on his hands. We have heard outrageous anti-Muslim fanaticism expressed at the highest levels of the Indian government, with no repercussions, no recriminations. They've created a climate in India of intimidation and terror for Muslims in India that resembles the American South after Reconstruction, when lynchings and brutality were cultural norms. And obviously, their philosophy, this Hindutva philosophy, is not unlike the tone of the savage Buddhist monks in Myanmar who dehumanized the Rohingya Muslims in Rakhine province and have been leading an ongoing genocide in that country. And obviously, it's very close and akin to Nazism and Zionism and the ideology of people like Slobodan Milosevic. But what I would like to say about Hindutva is that any anti-Muslim ideology, any ideology that includes any element of anti-Muslim hatred, you know, a genocidal ambition to purge Muslims out of existence, this is a suicidal ideology. This is like thinking that you can melt a glacier with a cigarette lighter. In our lifetime, India is going to have the largest Muslim population in the world. India is part of BRICS, and BRICS just doubled in size last week, adding 5 Muslim countries. And as it grows, BRICS is very likely to become a de facto Muslim political and economic bloc. There is no future in which enmity towards the Muslims makes any logical or practical sense for any nation. India is the only BRICS country that has a negative trade balance. They have a trade deficit that runs on average, I think, around $20 billion every month. Without remittances from Indians overseas, the Indian economy would cave in. The rupee would plummet into oblivion. Inflation would skyrocket. Unemployment would spread like wildfire, and investment inside of India would come to a grinding halt. And the bulk of those overseas remittances are coming from where? They're coming from Indians working in the GCC countries, in the UAE, in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, and so on. The Indian economy is held together by the hospitality of Muslim countries who let Indians work there and who let them send their money back home. Those money transfers don't have to be allowed to happen. There are regulatory measures that the Gulf states could take to restrict the transfer of capital out of their countries. They could do that. Half of the top 6 countries that India imports goods from are Muslim countries. And the other 3 are countries that India doesn't have particularly stable relations with. Modi needs to remember that his country is completely dependent, not partially dependent, completely dependent on friendly relations with the Muslim world. And you know, the state in India that brings in the most money from the Gulf, that brings in the most money from remittances from non-resident Indians, and the state in India that has the best relations with the Muslim world is Kerala. And not coincidentally, Kerala is the state where the BJP and their fanatical Hindutva ideology is the weakest. Good relations with the Muslims, good ties with the Muslim world, is a recipe for success and prosperity. You can't hate the Muslims and love yourself at the same time, because it's self-destructive. The Ummah is a glacier, and you can only chart your course around it, not through it. Now, what's happening now in India, and this is like what's happening in Israel, and to some extent in Europe as well, what's happening now is that these doomed ideologies, like Hindutva, like Zionism, like white nationalism, are basically kicking against the sunrise. They are in their death throes. They are flailing against their own inevitable demise. And the closer they get to the end, the more panicked they get, the more desperate they get. And that makes them become more violent. They're lashing out because they're dying out. And they have been so wrong, they have been so unjust, and they have been so brutal against the Muslims. And they're scared to death that when the Muslims eventually get the upper hand, we will enact revenge. That's what they think. That's what the Hindu nationalists think. That's what the Zionists think. And that's what the Muslim-hating Westerners think. They think that we want vengeance, because they think that everyone thinks the same way that they do. They think that everyone abuses power the way that they do, because they know that this is the lesson that they themselves have been teaching the world. They know that they preach tolerance, but practice intolerance. They know that they talk about racial and religious harmony, but that they practice racism and bigotry and division and prejudice. So they think that we'll do all of that to them. But what they don't understand is that we don't learn from them how to be. They're not our role models. They're not teaching us anything. We learn from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Our role model is the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, who pardoned his worst enemies when he gained the upper hand. He forgave. He was magnanimous in victory. And like Salah ad-Din, magnanimous in victory. We're not a vengeful people. We're not interested in retribution. We're interested in justice. We're interested in peace. If you've done wrong by us, all we're interested in is for you to stop doing wrong by us and to start doing right. And if you do that, we'll get along fine. Clean slate. If you reconcile yourself with the Muslims now, you'll be ahead of the curve. As I've talked about many times, the global economy is shifting to the global south. And the single largest cohesive population in the global south is the Muslims. The nations in the global south that possess the most important raw materials, from oil to gas to gold to rare earths, and have the most robust demographics, are the Muslim nations. There's no getting around the fact that the second half of the 21st century is going to be characterized by Muslim ascendancy. It's pointless to fight it. It's self-destructive to fight it. India already is, and is going to become even more integrated into global Muslim economies. Hostility towards the Muslims doesn't make any sense. And if Modi doesn't change, then India is going to have to change Modi, because there's no future in this fanaticism. India is never going to be a Hindu-only country. And India's economy is never going to be able to survive without being underwritten by the Muslims. Even your most famous tourist attraction is the Taj Mahal, a Muslim achievement. It's self-humiliation to hate Muslims, for anyone, but especially for Indians. And if you think that there's nothing that Muslims worldwide could do to pressure you, to pressure India, then you're delusional. Like I said, money transfers could be halted. Exports could be halted. 2 billion Muslims around the world could lobby trade organizations, trade commissions, chambers of commerce, lobby them to denounce the BJP. Indian shops and businesses in every Muslim country could be boycotted, and boycotted by Muslims and people who care about justice, even in the West, all around the world. The entire Indian diaspora could be lobbied to denounce Hindutva and the BJP, and countries like the UAE and Qatar and Saudi Arabia can pump money from their sovereign wealth funds into the political opposition in India. Why, overnight, the entire infrastructure that keeps the BJP afloat could be disabled. We have the ability to impose catastrophic organ failure on the entire political establishment of India. And the reason why we're not doing that isn't because we can't. It isn't because we don't know how. And it isn't because we don't have the will to do it. It's because we are a peaceful and compassionate and kind-hearted people, and we don't like having to play hardball. We don't like being combative and confrontational. And we want you to do the right thing because it is the right thing, not because we forced you to do it. We want to get along. Muslims have a natural reflex towards de-escalation, towards mediation, arbitration, negotiation. We approach conflict calmly, with the intent to calm it down. We don't like to act forcefully if it can be avoided, but when it can't be avoided, we have the ability to do the needful. And India, maybe more than any other country in the world, would be helpless against worldwide collective Muslim action. And if you think that places like the UAE or places like Qatar or Saudi Arabia are dependent on Indian workers and professionals, okay, I'll tell you, no doubt, Indians in those countries play a significant role in the functioning of those countries' economies, no question about it. But think about this. Ask yourself, if those Indian workers and those Indian professionals in those Gulf countries had to choose between loyalty to the BJP or loyalty to their employer, who do you think they would choose? If they had to choose between going back home for the sake of Hindutva or keeping their visa and their residency in Dubai, how many of them would start packing their bags? And how many officials in the Indian government would even want them to come home? They don't want them to come home. They want them to keep sending their money home. They need them to keep sending their money home. No, India has no bargaining position. We know it and they know it. India's admirable non-aligned stance which is the only reason why Western media ever talks about anti-Muslim hatred in India, because they want to pressure India to realign with the West. Well, that non-aligned position is only possible because of the Muslims. Without us, India would either become a Western colony again or a Chinese colony. India would be in no position to act autonomously, and that's a fact. Now, movements like Hindutva and parties like the BJP are doomed. It's just a question of how much damage they're going to be able to do to their country before they inevitably fall apart.